12th District State Senator Brad Hawkins with us on Tuesdays every week, talking to us about things happening in the Senate during the legislative sessions. And today, get our first opportunity to talk with Brad about that revenue forecast that came out last week and turned up very rosy as far as the numbers were concerned. I also might talk in detail about a few other items should time permit, but we really want to focus on the financials with Brad this morning, since that's taking a large focus of both the Senate and House's time these days. And Brad, I appreciate the time so much. Thanks as always.
Good morning, Chris. Always great to be on with you.
Yeah, spring is springing, and I'm wondering about things going on at the state capitol. We're hearing a story that somebody on the House floor in Oregon to our south in Salem actually contracted COVID and was on their House floor yesterday, so apparently they've cleared it out. You haven't been over to the state senate or to either chamber so far this year, if I'm not mistaken, or have you made any sojourns that direction at all?
I haven't. I've had the opportunity to, if I wanted to, but frankly, things have been going so well for me with the remote session. But basically, it started off almost 100% remote, but now, over time, there has been an influx of some of the members from the Senate participating in person, mainly during the floor debates. So the floor debates are kind of interesting. Right now, we're in the committee phase, so we're back hearing the House bills that passed over from the House of Representatives. But when we do return to the full floor for the budget votes or for other policy bills coming over from the House through the Senate committees, there will be the option. I mean, at any point in time, there's probably 10 to 15 members of the 49-member state Senate participating in person. They're masked up, but they're 6 feet apart. But then also the rest of us are participating remotely via Zoom. So it has definitely turned into a hybrid session. So it's been interesting.
And Brad, before we jump into the figures here, I know this is something that I've discussed with perhaps you and also Representatives Gaynor and Steele as well, but I know some time ago there was a lot of discussion about, in fact, almost got set up that some legislators from the eastern portions of the state were going to be able to testify remotely. I would imagine, given this scenario, we're getting very close to seeing that occur in non-pandemic years in the future, again, as a result of what we've seen this year and it been so successful.
Yeah, no doubt. So in the state Senate, we actually were on the front lines of piloting a remote testimony, and we're actually really proud of it because, in my opinion, so much of what normally goes on at the Capitol is largely influenced from the people who are in close proximity to the Capitol, which are people in the greater Puget Sound area. And whenever you're passing bills or taking hearings and it's all in person, then there's a disproportionate impact of the people who are in close proximity to those hearing rooms. But that's really not the case with this remote testimony. So like a lot of things are going to be different after this pandemic, post-pandemic, I think definitely remote testimony would potentially hopefully be here to stay. But just like remote working, I think we heard a testimony information from the Washington State Department of Transportation, and they told us that before the pandemic, there were less than 6% of their employees that worked remotely. But after the pandemic, they're actually instituting a program where upwards to 30, maybe 40% of their employees statewide would be able to work remotely. So this pandemic has definitely changed a lot of things. And I think a lot of my Seattle colleagues, the Democrat members in the Senate, are probably a little bit nervous about all the building space and all the commercial high rises and everything in downtown Seattle, because those might not be needed as much anymore in a post-pandemic world.
Yeah, there's a lot of things still to be seen, I guess, as far as what will happen. Some good things, some positive things potentially will come out of this. But, you know, also obviously a few things that folks might not be as happy about as they were before, depending on what sector of the trade force they're in or, you know, other details of their world. But we'll have to wait and see about that, and we'll stay tuned to those details. Brad, let's jump in and talk about what we were going to today, which is, again, that really rosy revenue forecast. It came out last week, and this is our first opportunity to talk with you about it. but it looks a heck of a lot better than it had originally been forecasted to. We're talking billions of dollars in surplus here with a B. So that's very good news. Of course, there's always a little bit of a split, if not a large divide, especially between parties, a lot of times between how you want to spend extra revenues or spend money in general in the state coffers. So what's your approach as far as this extra money is concerned and how it affects the budget?
Well, you're right, Chris. You mentioned springtime, and in the springtime, green things sprout up, and I guess that's what's happening with this revenue forecast. It's very positive news. Despite everything that the state has endured during this pandemic and with even the partial economic reopening, so the state forecasts revenue every quarter, and so that helps inform the budget writers. And just like anything, a budget is really an estimate of your revenues and then an estimate of your expenditures. And on the revenue side, yeah, we continue to be up. You know, one quarter ago, I was very pleased that the revenue forecast showed revenues higher than projected, and that gave us some hope. And then 3 months later now, with this latest revenue forecast, it shows for the current biennium that we're in, we're up a few billion dollars beyond what was anticipated. And then looking ahead for the next four-year period, the state budget's on a biennial basis, which is 2 years, but we have a four-year outlook. And for the next 4 years, the revenue forecast is predicted to be an increase of over $5 billion beyond what was expected. So we have currently approximately a $55 billion two-year budget. So an extra $5 billion is fabulous. Also, we have, in addition to this extra state revenue, we have more federal dollars coming in from these multiple stimulus packages. And keep in mind, we still have a very healthy budget stabilization account, which is known to many people as our rainy day fund, which has a balance itself of about $2 billion. So between all these sources of revenue, personally, I think we're in very good shape, and definitely it starts to undercut the argument for why we need new revenues in our state and new taxes. So I don't know if this puts in peril the capital gains income tax proposal or other taxes, but certainly extra revenue through normal economic activity is very, very good news.
Talking with State Senator Brad Hawkins from the 12th Legislative District on the air today here on the Coho Morning Show. He talks to us on Tuesdays every week here on the program throughout the legislative sessions. And yeah, Brad, that was something that, again, your counterparts in the House, Gaynor and Steele, who were on the program last Friday discussing this, were very vehemently opposed to and said they wanted sort of stricken or would like to see stricken immediately as that call for a capital gains tax here in the state. And I'll ask you the same question I did them, because I think, again, as we talked about earlier, some of these things that are a bit unprecedented. I mean, this isn't the first time that we've had a capital gains tax proposed in the state, but I conjectured or wondered if that got passed, if it wouldn't open up the eventuality of just a straight income tax across the board here in Washington State, potentially. Is that a concern for you?
Absolutely a concern for me. That is the foot in the door scenario that I see. And that's really the reason I predict, despite all these extra revenues, that the supporters of that tax are going to push forward, because what they see, Chris, in my opinion, is a window of opportunity. The pro-tax proponents can control the legislature, both House and the Senate. The Senate was kind of the hurdle for this particular bill, the pinch point, but they got it through the Senate. The governor is just waiting with his catcher's mitt to get this bill, you know, onto his desk. And they know, frankly, that the state Supreme Court, with its recent Hearst decision, McCleary decision, the Blake decision on drug possession, that the Supreme Court is very sort of tax-friendly and willing to wade into policy issues and really co-opt the legislative branch's responsibility rather than sort of being their own separate judicial branch. So I think they see this window of opportunity, and then once they get the bill passed, and if the court potentially upholds it, then the thresholds that are currently in the law will eventually over time be reduced. and the threat, and then the exemptions will be eliminated to the point where it affects everybody. And one thing I do want to add too, Chris, is this is not a reform. This capital gains tax is not a reform. We do have a very regressive tax structure in our state, so I'll acknowledge that, which that means that the lower income portion of the population pays a disproportionately greater portion of their income as taxes, and that's primarily because the state relies so heavily on the state sales tax and some other taxes. Well, adding an income tax, if you capped it and correspondingly reduced the regressive taxes, could be actually a reform that could be helpful. But that's not the conversation that is had with this bill. This bill is keeping all the existing highly regressive taxes in place and just layering on a new additional tax. So it's not a reform, it's just a new tax, and it's a new tax when, frankly, we don't need the revenue, but I think it's going to be pushed forward anyway due to the state Supreme Court and the political opportunities that are in play. And then once that's in place, it's going to probably be chipped away and whittled away, probably over throughout the lifetime of my career. So I'll unfortunately be able to see that to the point where then it does affect everybody, which is very unfortunate.
Well, we're one of only a handful of states that does not have a state income tax. And if you were born and raised here like I was, and I know you were, Brad, it's something that we all sort of take for granted and very much enjoy. And so would very much be disappointed to see get enacted, just as far as, you know, we understand that we need tax revenues, that there has to be some money collected from the general population in order to make things go in the state. But at the same time, to have that longstanding tradition come to an end, I think would affect adversely a lot of families here in Washington State that suddenly would be paying income taxes on their income, and not to mention small business owners who are already hit with pretty heavy taxes here, are one of the heaviest tax states in the nation as far as small businesses are concerned, Washington.
And that's exactly right, Chris. So these other states, for example, many of them do have an income tax as part of their tax and their revenue portfolio, but they don't have such heavy sales taxes in all these states. They don't have such a huge business and occupation tax burden on the businesses. So that I really think the conversation could have been different if this tax was an effort to lower some, to bring in this tax, make it revenue neutral, and truly do some reforms. But again, that's not the case. So for the people out there that are very concerned about Washington State's very regressive tax system, I understand your concerns. It's not something that I diminish in any way, but I just wanted to point out, despite the contrary messaging with this bill and the capital gains, it's not a reform in any way. It's simply a new additional tax, which frankly, Chris, some people do support that. I don't. I would have rather seen a true reform, and I think there could have been opportunities to do that. But I guess it will remain to be seen. If this bill does advance to the governor, there is an opportunity as a check and a balance for a citizen referendum, much like the comprehensive sex education bill. Any bill that passes the legislature within a certain number of days after the governor signs it, there is an opportunity for a citizens' referendum. It's similar in some ways to the initiative process, but in the sense that there's a statewide vote. But the initiative process is something that citizens create on their own outside of the legislative process. The referendum process is something that is an option available to citizens after the legislative process. So I don't think the final chapter on this is written. It'll be very interesting to see what happens in the months ahead, if it does pass.
Yeah, and the reality of this circumstance, I would imagine too, Brad, is that, sort of citizens' referendum, if you would become more likely, I would guess, because the people affected by this are going to have a heavier influence. Let's face it, they're power players. People that have this kind of revenue coming in are probably going to have a greater pull or a greater sway potentially with the legislature or with a process like that. So I'm guessing this has got several more barriers to go through before it actually would go into law.
Yeah. And speaking of heavy hitters, there was actually a proposal this year called a wealth tax, which was actually designed for just a handful of people. The Bill Gateses of the world, the Jeff Bezos, Starbucks CEO, and some of these other super, super rich people. And so that was kind of an interesting proposal, too. So there are always different suggestions out there. It is difficult to make its way all the way through the process, which is why the capital gains tax took so long to actually make it as far as it is. But I do think there's a good chance it'll pass this year, but it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out on the ballot. If it gets there.
yeah, absolutely. Brad, I appreciate the time as always. Anything else you want to mention? I know we were going to potentially go into a little bit about the other budgets, but sort of running thin on time here. But is there anything really quickly that you wanted to mention regarding finances and that revenue forecast that now looks better?
Well, fortunately, I am thankful that looks better. The other budgets are being released. The transportation budget was released yesterday. That'll come through committee. The capital budget as well. All of these budgets need to come through their committees and get approved by their chambers. And then the Senate budgets and the House budgets get compared. And then ultimately we have to agree on the exact same negotiated final budgets. And so that'll be happening over the next few weeks. And hopefully the governor will sign those and we'll during the session. But if anybody has any questions on things we discussed, feel free to reach out to me at senatorbradhawkins.org, and you can get all my contact information there, and we'll work hard to answer your questions.
Outstanding, Brad. Well, we appreciate your addressing some of ours every week here on the program. Until the next go around next Tuesday, stay safe, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds great, Chris. Thanks so much.